afternoon, Cape Cod and the Islands. Welcome back to episode 62 of the Cape Cod Sportscast. Wesley Sykes here, joined, as always, by Rich McClung.
We are back, baby.
I know. We had some technical difficulties last week, some unplanned
that was a technical little frustrating. Difficulties.
Tell me about it, yeah. Especially because I don't know what happened, and then it just went back to working normal.
Ghost in the Machine.
Yeah, it something.
Was, what's that, one of the better Police albums, I believe, from the 80s? Ghost in the Machine? A little before your time?
I think so.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. Not much of a Billy Idol fan, you know?
The police isn't Billy Idol.
I know.
All right. They don't know that you don't know.
But that's the point. Well, they either get it or they don't.
Okay, all right. So, episode 62, we had all those great 62s last week that we ran through.
Yeah, do you remember any of them?
I remember the USS New Jersey.
That's right.
It was my favorite, number 62.
So that's probably the fourth time I've heard this one, and it gets tougher and tougher to reenact.
Yeah.
You know, like, and when you do like a 5-minute take, and then a 5-minute take.
And yeah. I'm trying to remember. Was it John Lester, number 62, when he came up?
When he came up, yeah.
And there were a couple of offensive linemen from the Patriots.
Joe Tooney was one that I recalled.
And
Ryan Brazier.
Yeah, Ryan Brazier.
Was it Ryan Wendell?
That sounds right.
Right around there? Is that? Cause I remember we were talking about this, and I was like, was he an interior lineman, or was he all over the place? And I think Wendell was kind of like a utility lineman.
And then there was a guy who plays for the San Jose Sharks who could be meeting our Boston Bruins in the Stanley Cup
Finals.
Yes, yeah. That remains to be seen.
There was Ryan Brazier when he first got his starts out in the Anaheim Angels.
There you go.
Or Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, depending on what incarnation.
California Angels.
Not at that point. Yeah. Definitely. They Angels weren't in the outfield at that point. Jabba Chamberlain.
That's right.
Ruby De La Rosa.
Ruby De La Rosa.
Ruby. Now I saw it again, and I'm like, there's two Bs. It's like Groundhog's Day all over again.
Absolutely.
Jose Quintana, very nice strikeout pitcher. Donnie Sadler, who could forget the utility outfielder from the late 90s, early aughts from the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And Jorge Posada, when he came up in 95.
There we go.
Born number 62.
Hey, before we get into high school, I have an NBA question for you.
Oh, boy.
Because I know that is your favorite league to follow.
Sure.
Now that the draft...
Also the NFL, but yeah, I'm a big basketball guy.
Now that the draft lottery's over,
mm-hmm.
If you're New Orleans, what do you do? Do you still trade AD, or do you keep him around and see if you can get something going with him and Zion?
Well, I think it's more nuanced than that, to be honest with you. I think, first of all, you have to talk to Anthony Davis to see what he wants to do and get some assurances from him.
Well, I mean...
But I think at the very least, you hold on to him, see how it works. Maybe you can convince him. Maybe Zion comes out of the gates and is this great player. Maybe you come out and you say that he's a little raw and he needs some fine-tuning. And then at the trade deadline, then you make your move. But I think you hold the AD chip for as long as you can.
All right, so we are in total agreement there, because I really believe that he needs to he's sticking around no matter what. He's doing what they tell, because right now the Pelicans still hold the cards.
Well, there's a lot of scuttlebutt, though. I still think Anthony Davis holds the cards. Especially considering how, all of last season played out.
Yeah, but they don't have to move him at all. They could just keep him until
And then you don't get anything for him.
Yeah. But they'll probably, I think their best bet is keeping him around until January or February and seeing, how things fit.
I think, but again, that's assuming that he wants to stay. If he wants to get out there, then I don't want that type of personality and invite that sort of conflict into a locker room for another year.
Well, you got to look at what would they get for him. For the Knicks, they probably get the number 3 and some players, right?
Yeah, and I would think it would have to be a number of picks.
And
because they don't have a lot of players.
Yeah, not really. Frankie Nicolina and...
Maybe Kevin Knox, but even Knicks fans are saying they don't want to give up Kevin Knox. So,
and then the Lakers have even less to offer, right?
No, I've heard the Lakers are off the table because of everything that happened.
Okay, well,
that they can go, they'll trade him anywhere but the Lakers out of spite.
All right, yeah. Well, I like that.
Yeah, which I do too. So again, I think it really comes down to Anthony Davis. That's one of the only leagues where players can dictate where they go and when and where they get moved. as we saw with Kyrie Irving.
And you would drive Kyrie to the airport? Yes, am I correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I will take a lovable loser than a hateable winner, that winner in quotation marks.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, no so, thanks.
So that I just wanted to get the NBA take there.
That was it.
We hadn't had a chance to talk about it yesterday because we were very busy.
Yeah, in the thick of it. Let's start with baseball as we're getting down to the nitty gritty here. I think there's only, you know, a handful of games left for, you know, most of the teams, maybe five at most. You know, you get the extra week of the season.
It's
graduation's right around the corner. Playoff tickets are being punched.
It's crazy how fast we are coming up on the end of the regular season.
Yeah, and it's been, you know, for as overcast and gloomy and rainy as the weather's kind of been this spring, when it's came time to play games, I mean, there hasn't really, they'll have that extra week built in, but most teams won't even need to use that.
No, which is surprising. Like, Falmouth got a makeup game in with DY last night, and I think they are right on schedule to finish their slate on time. You know, right. Which they have late game May 28th, I think, is their last game with New Bedford.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was always supposed to be May 28th. So, yeah, it's going to be fun to see where we're at. And it looks like we could possibly have a handful of playoff teams on the diamond.
Yeah, I think so. You know, let's start at the top here. Sandwich Blue Knights cruising.
Yeah, they're
their
in.
Second straight ACL title. I think third out of the last 4 years. So the senior group has known really nothing but Atlantic Coast League championships. Currently standing at 13-4 with a 6-2 league record that's wrapped up. They went 2-1 this week. They got three games left, potentially against all teams that they've already beaten. They've beaten Monomoy already, which they closed the season with. They opened the Cape Cod Showdown against Falmouth, who they swept. And then whatever the result is, it's either DY or Nauset, who they've also beaten. They've split with DY, but swept Nauset there. So, you know, they're in good shape right there to enter the season or enter the second season, primed and ready to forget about last year's first round exit, unceremonious exit, in the D3 South playoffs.
Yeah, that's going to be a team that's certainly on a mission come playoff time, because the regular season has been all about just getting ready for that. 15-5 in D3, you're probably looking at top five or six seed, definitely one home game, maybe two.
Well, and that's assuming a loss.
So what did I say? They're 13-4.
13-4, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, even if they run the table, they'd be, what, 16-4? So, yeah, they're going to be on the top half of the bracket, at least one home game, maybe two. That's a team that is primed to make a really deep run, and they're going to be fun to watch. The thing that's interesting, though, is in the playoffs, there's a good chance they could have an early game with Falmouth. You know, should the bracket sit the right way, if Falmouth's able to get in, and DY also looming in that D3 South field. So
I gotta imagine DY would be higher up though. That first round meeting would probably be
I'm sorry, down the road is what, you know, they could end up playing both of those teams four times this year potentially.
Yeah, it could be. Definitely could be here. Yeah, I think the big thing about the Knights this year has been their pitching. They've had complete games. I have to look back over last night's score on Wednesday, or Thursday, I should say, excuse me. But they've had complete games in about five of their last six games, and very efficient when you're talking about Dylan Ryan, and John Tropia. They've got a great performance from Jacob Lapp. They've had Whitaker on the mound throwing complete games. So they've been on a real tear. It's been an efficient game. So they started out the season when talking to head coach Brian Tomasini, upwards of the 90 pitch counts, and now they're getting those complete games in around high 70s, low 80s.
They're like great poker hand, man. A lot of aces.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I think could be a difference maker in this year's playoffs compared to last year's. I felt like last year's team was a little wild, and they have when talking about the pitching staff, a lot of walks, a lot of high pitch counts, and this team just seems to be running very efficiently right now. And the aforementioned Tyler Whitaker has been lights out at the plate. He hit, I believe it's his fourth or fifth home run in the last like eight games. Seeing the ball really well. And yeah, the funny thing about, when I was talking to Brian Tomasini, he was saying how You know, I would love to see this team in warm weather. It hasn't even warmed up yet. He's like, I'd love to see Dylan Ryan, you know, throwing in with a little humidity behind him on the ball, or have the same thing with Tyler Whitaker at the plate. You know, and you have guys all over the place doing it. You know, it's 15 seniors, so they're very experienced. My big concern, and I think this will come up with a lot of the teams across the sports as we reach the end of the year, a lot of the playoffs don't start until after graduation. So when you have a team like with 15 seniors like Sandwich does, do those minds start to wander a little bit once you kind of take the reins off of them and you don't have them confined in a school for 8 hours a day?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. However, if this is a team that's destined to do things, they're going to put the team first, and they're going to...
Well, sure. But, you know, you have 15 guys who, you know, just got the shackles released, you know?
I totally feel
the whole
feel
world
you.
In front of you. It's easy to get your... That's a mind of a 17-year-old.
True. And that is a lot of seniors. But I think the Blue Knights are this year's team, I think they're going to be able to keep it together. I really like that group. I think that they play the game the right way. And I foresee a deep run for Sandwich High.
I do too, but you know, I will say with the caveat that I expected that last year as well. And they were, of course, no hitter, you know, out of the playoffs.
There you go. So
anything can happen.
Yeah, yes. But those were juniors who did have the shackles on and were under that.
They were mostly a junior team, but there was a lot of good seniors on that team as well. Nick Heyer, who played Division II baseball, who was their ace and first baseman.
Heyer's a good player.
You know, Nick Carr is playing over at UMass Dartmouth right now, who was just in the Little East Conference championship game. They lost to UMass Boston, which is also a great program. But, you know, there was a lot of good players on that team.
So, we know their pitching is the strength of that team. What is, like, the under-the-radar, you know, variable on that team that you think is going to make or break them?
It's the defense. And I'm not even sure if it's under the radar. I mean, they're doing a lot of things well, but, you know, the ability to pitch to contact and be able to have the confidence in your, you know, I'm thinking of their middle infielders and Cam Schuer and Nate Coleman, you know, they gobble up everything. And that's what I think is the huge difference when I see, you know, high school baseball and softball is, how many extra outs can you give teams, and how much does that come back and hurt you? And it usually does.
Well, that is a great segue, because I have a fun story to tell you about a game last night. So Falmouth, as you know, played Dennis Yarmouth last night.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically must-win territory for the Clippers now. They entered the game 6-9, have to go 4-1 down the stretch to make the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And it's doable for this team. They were in a very similar situation last year. They got in at 10-10. And then almost ran the table, went all the way to the South Finals. So this is not an untraveled road. It's just not the easiest road to travel. So I don't know what the weather was like where you were last night.
Mm-hmm.
But at Gov Fuller Field, right around 7 o'clock or so, let's call it 7:45 actually,
mm-hmm,
a weird rainstorm came through.
I got a little bit of that, yeah.
There was a rainbow over right field,
mm-hmm,
and then all of a sudden it started to pour. It started to pour with the game 1-1 in the bottom of the sixth inning, two outs, and Colby Davis is at the plate.
All right.
And he hits a lazy fly ball to center field, and the center fielder dropped it. And it was in his glove. The rain was coming down very hard, and I don't know if that's probably the reason why, but the ball just fell right out of his glove. Then Anthony Carson comes up. He has been riding the struggle bus lately. He just cannot buy his way into a base hit. Works a count, gets himself a walk, and then Nick Cavosa comes to the plate behind 1-2 against one of their better pitchers, Avosa, for DY. Very big, tall right-hander, and made him look silly on a 1-1 pitch with had him chasing a curveball up high, and then 1-2, he left a fastball right over the middle of the plate. Cavosa lines it in the left center for a double, two-run score. Then he gets caught leaning at second base. The shortstop tries to throw to the second baseman, throws it all the way to the right field wall.
Oh, man.
Cavosa comes
You're
around
kidding.
To score, and Falmouth ends up getting three. And then as soon as Max Roman comes out to pitch the top of the seventh, rain's gone.
Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful again. And Roman gets him 1-2-3. And Falmouth gets the win in a game they absolutely had to have. And, you know, hats off to Max Roman. One hitter. The only hit he gave up was a third inning roller up the third base side that, you know, was basically a swinging bunt. Carson was playing deep because there was no reason to play for the bunt. And that ended up coming around to score. Falmouth made an error. And like you said, defense, you can't give good teams extra outs. But they end up getting that win, and it was really impressive. But it's just funny that, you know, the weather. It was
20 minutes or so, right?
The baseball gods seemed to intervene. The Clippers have not gotten a lot of breaks this year. They got a huge one last night.
I would be royally upset at myself if I was DY at that point.
I heard one of the DY coaches talking to one of his players as they left the field, saying, it was so weird that the rain came right at that moment. And, you know, if it just had held off, we win that game.
Yeah, it's like someone pressed a button at the Buffalo Wild Wings. It was force extra innings or something.
It was just like that. It was crazy. But, yeah, so the Clippers have New Bedford today. I guess the Whalers have really had a rough season.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put any win absolutely in the win column, but they're hoping to get a W there. That would put them at 8-9 heading into the showdown. Tough first round draw with Sandwich.
Right. Yeah.
You get a hope to at least
third time around. Yeah, you know, maybe things aren't
really. All you have to do is get a split at the showdown. You have to win one game. And then all the marbles on the line against New Bedford in the season finale on May 28th,
mm-hmm.
which is, again, a game they should win. It'd be all hands on deck that day. You know, you got to figure Roman would be available. You got Griesbauer. And the big, you know, the big wild card here is Alex Frattantoni is supposed to be back early next week. Mm-hmm. They haven't had him for over a month, and he is undoubtedly their best pitcher. So
that'll be a nice addition, late season.
Yeah, and I really feel like if Frattantoni had been healthy the whole season, rather than looking at 7-9, you're probably 9-7, 10-6. But you miss all those starts, and you're putting more pressure on, you know, bullpen guys, and you know, it just you really have had a depleted pitching staff there. So getting him back is really going to be a big shot in the arm for the Clippers.
All right, and over in Upper Cape before we get to the Canalmen here. Upper Cape Tech quietly putting together another strong season, 11-5, 6-2 in the MAC. They punched their ticket already to the postseason. And they've also assured themselves a spot in the state small school vocational tournament as well as one of those top four teams.
Yep.
Right now, I believe they're sitting in third. I believe there's a McCann Tech out in, I don't know if it's like Agawam, but out in Western Mass. And then Old Colony, who their only two league losses are two. That's the top team in the Southern, or I should say the small vocational tournament. But they got four games left. They've split those. So this will be a good kind of measuring stick game in the regular season.
Now, when do they play those?
So that's a good question. They weren't in it last year, so I didn't get a chance to see it. You know, the timing of it.
I'm just wondering, is that before the state tournament?
You know, I think it's after.
Okay. Interesting that,
or maybe
I was just wondering if they
like running. I don't know I don't have a definitive answer on that.
I was wondering if maybe they ran that the holiday weekend like the showdown.
Maybe it could be.
We'll let you know next week.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna have to know that sooner rather than later here, but again they have four games left in the regular season, some good baseball too that they'll be seeing against Bourne, who they beat on a walk off to open the season. Mashpee, who's had their number, but that's been a good rivalry over the last couple of years. Wareham, who shellacked them at Doran Park earlier in the season. I think it was like 17-4. And then Southeastern, who they've beaten already as well. And much like I just said about that Sandwich team, the thing that sticks out to me about the Rams is, one, they can hit, but they gobble up everything defensively, especially anything to that left side with Jared Westgate at third base and Connor Reedy, who might be my favorite defensive player, whether it's basketball or baseball. Yeah, he's like a really awesome defender, you know, guard defender on the basketball court, but he gobbles up everything at shortstop, makes plays on the run, backhanded Derek Jeter leaps, you know, he's there. So he's a guy that definitely sticks out to me. I think Gabe Coutinho, the head coach there, does a good job of kind of keeping everything loose and, you know, keeping them focused too. I think that does a nice balance there.
Over in Mashpee, the Falcons, man, they are running hot right now. They had a little, you know, they ran into East Bridgewater, I think it was, and some of those larger school teams, Middleborough, and were struggling a little bit, sitting at 4-5-6, and they've just put four wins in a row together. And now they're 9-6, one win away. Pitching has been fantastic. You know, that's the sister, Jagger Bryant. Zach Rogers had a gem yesterday in a win against Carver, and kid that we're going to be talking a lot about down the road, Colton Colleran, eighth grader. You know, so I finally get a chance to see him pitch in person.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of reminded me a little bit of Stevie Cishek. Now, when Steve was young, he wasn't quite as low as Colton is now, but he is below sidearm, just a tad, mm-hmm. and he doesn't throw that hard. But I'm telling you, something about that delivery and the way the ball's coming in sideways, it is really hard on the right-handed hitters.
Okay.
So he's one to watch. As he grows into his body, that kid's going to be a really good baseball player for them for the next 4 years.
Well, you heard it. He's already destined for the major leagues at this point.
There you go.
No expectations whatsoever.
I was just comparing his style, not the outcome.
Over in Bourne's got their backs up against the wall on the baseball diamonds. They're 7-8, 6-7 in the league. They've gone 0-3 this week, but they've had a really tough schedule. They got shut out by a Fairhaven team on a five hitter after getting shut out by a Ponequit, who has one loss on the year. They're a really loaded team this year. 2-0, and it was a real pitcher's duel that came down to the end.
Now, Ponequit's a D3 team, right? They're not D4, are they?
No, definitely not D4. Yeah. It's a regional school.
Yeah, so they're a bigger school.
They could be D2 for all I know, but they're at the lowest D3. But again, you know, they get another crack at him today. This game's going to be at Cody Field. Five games left, so again, Upper Cape Tech, who they lost to open the season. They lost to Ponequit. They played DR, who they've beaten. They played Martha's Vineyard, who they've beaten, but that was a very close game. And then they have the South Coast Conference crossover game, which if it were to start right now, it would be Old Rochester, who has also beaten them. So they're 2-3 against their five remaining teams.
And they have to go 3-2.
Yeah, and they're playing they're playing good baseball. They lost to Wareham 4-2. They're without their catcher, who was suspended for a game for bowling over another catcher, who, from my understanding, this guy was huge. So when he was going into the plate, he kind of like naturally went into his head and neck area because of the height differential.
Oh, he didn't slide, though?
Yeah, but he didn't slide. So he got tossed for that one.
There you go.
But again, Alex Sorrenti Burns. So he's going to Anna Maria. He's a heck of a player. Senior captain for him as well. But at any rate, probably you'll see him. You'll probably see him on Post 188 at some point.
There you go.
This summer.
Yeah, they already had their tryout, so we should have a roster. Yeah, so
they had
the
tryouts over the weekend, and they should be. Yeah, I think they're still doing a little bit of scouting.
Yeah, my prediction for that is you're going to have probably 8 Blue Knights in the starting lineup, and Chris Pareto in right field.
You'd be surprised because, Ben Smith was a returning starter last year for them, who was a great center fielder and starting pitcher for them from Bourne.
Yeah.
And don't be surprised to see a couple more people from Bourne this year.
No, I think the biggest problem that Tomasini has is I think they only have 18 roster spots.
Yeah, it was 32 between the junior and senior team. Yeah, so that sounds about right.
18 varsity spots, and you're only allowed a couple of swing players, I believe.
Right.
And I tell you, the amount of talent mm-hmm. between all the schools that they draw from is ridiculous.
Yeah, and I know he's not exactly upset about this, though, but Brian Thomas, he said he's a couple of his kids are going to be playing for Proto and Team Cape Cod. It makes his job easier, though.
It does make his job a lot easier, but
then you obviously deal with the murmurs around the community saying he's just taking his own sandwich kids, even though they may be the best of the bunch.
Sure,
but then if he already knows two of his typical starters are not going to be on the team, maybe that takes a little bit of leeway off of him.
I personally have always felt like Legion Ball was better than Team Cape Cod.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's come back around, and talking to him this week, Brian was saying that, the numbers were half of that. They used to have 18 kids come out for 18 spots.
Sure.
And now they're having 60 kids come out for 30. five spots between the two teams. So they didn't have that junior. That's a fairly new thing they brought back.
No, and the junior team is awesome and benefited a lot of our programs. Mashpee had a couple of kids who were on that junior team last year. Willie mm-hmm. Baker, Jared Barr, and the
Pooch,
one
was
the
Pooch there? Was he Cape Cod?
Team
Cape
I think Cod. Pooch plays Team Cape Cod.
Okay.
But I tell you, man, I've seen such a raise, you know, in the total overall play of those two kids in particular. And I really think that that's a testament to what the Legion, you know, junior team has been able to do.
Yeah, and I think just the Legion team in general. You know, I see all those kids and read the names and the papers and the highlights and everything like that. And, you know, it's no surprise to me that they played on, you know, got that extra time in the summer playing high quality, high level baseball.
Absolutely.
And they're reaping the benefits of it now. But, you know, Bourne took a 2-1 lead on the road against Wareham. I want to say that was on Wednesday. And then without their catcher, a couple pass balls, a couple errors, three runs come in to score. So it's 4-2 game. And then Eric Zine came in for Wareham and just blew the doors off of Bourne for the last three outs of the game. He was throwing smoke out there. So that'll do it to you. And it's a frustrating thing because they take the 2-1 lead, you know, an inning before in the top of the sixth and the bottom part of the frame. You know, they give it right back. Yeah. And they scratch for that run. It was a double that was, I think, just shy of a home run, a single, a sacrifice fly. You get the run cross. You know, you like manufactured it, you know, which I think is better than just going double, double, double or something like that. You know, I kind of like that you had to work about it and there's a certain mental...
I don't know. As an offensive guy, I'll take the double, double, double. But,
oh, sure. Yeah.
I know what you're saying, though. It's almost more satisfying.
Right.
To manufacture a run than, you know, just pace the ball all over the park.
I would say I'm typically a glass half full type of guy when it comes to sports. So I think, or at least when it comes to high school sports. Okay. You get to professional sports, I'm a little more cynical. But yeah, they're playing in a lot of tight games, and whether they're taking the lead and then giving it back, you know, obviously that hurts.
Yeah.
But I think you can take away from it that the team responds well in tight situations in late games because they found themselves in a lot of those situations. Now, if they can just kind of find themselves on the right end of that,
sure,
or finish games out. You know, I think that's the big thing with Bourne right now.
Well, hey, it's going to be exciting going down the stretch, and they're in the ball game. You know, exactly. Better to have a chance than to be sitting on the outside knowing that your season's over. You know, after that last game,
right? Yeah, and especially about teams that have a chance. Let's hop over to the softball circle real quick. I just got two teams worth mentioning here: Sandwich. 5-9 after starting the season, like 0-7. You know, they're 2-6 in the league. Their league's wrapped up, but they've won four in a row. Two huge marquee victories, in my opinion, beating Monomoy and Molly Charest 4-3 at home last week.
That's a good
win. And then following that up with I believe it was a 2-1 win against Middleborough in Middleborough, which is, you know, I think they were the South champions. I don't know if that's D2 or D3, but they are perennial power. That crushed them in the opening game of the season in a 5-inning affair.
So you said they're 5-9. Are they playing? Do you know if they're playing 20 or are they playing?
So they
18?
Have four games left, including the Cape Cod showdown.
That's a
And one of them is against Monomoy. The others they open against Falmouth, who they played well against in their last meeting.
I think they have another regular season game with Falmouth too.
I don't think so.
Did they already play twice?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then SJP who. Rain Turley and Sophia Bruno combined to throw a perfect game against last week. So that should be a win. You know, Falmouth, I expect, should be a good game. You know, if they lose that game and draw Nauset, that's a win.
But they'd be out if
but
they...
But they'd be out of it, yeah.
So now, they'd get a run the table.
Well, it depends. I'd have to look at, you know, if they get in via the Sullivan rule. I didn't check that. I would imagine that's not in play for them.
I doubt it.
But, yeah, I don't think that's the case, but yeah, they have to go on a run. And again, going out to Monomoy, face Charest again, and which was a 4-3 game in Sandwich, that, you know, took some timely hitting, some close plays. It was kind of like a swinging bunt, stole second, wild pitch, sacrifice.
There you go.
Know, and that was like kind of like the winning run, I think, there. And the other team I have on the softball field real quick, 5-9, similar situation. For the Upper Cape girls, they've won like five of their last seven, just completely mashing the ball. 22-7 win against St. John Paul this week. Four games left: Cape Tech, Mashpee, Wareham, SJP. So they've gone 2-2 in those games. But again, Mashpee, I believe, if I recall correctly, that was a real high-scoring back-and-forth affair that Mashpee came back on them on. So I think that could be a winnable game if things bounce the right way for them. And they got blown out by Wareham. So, if, you know, similar, they might be a better recipient for the Sullivan rule than Sandwich would be. I'd have to double-check that. But again, similar situation. Started off the season not expecting anything. You know, had to replace 6 of the 9 fielding positions that you have, or 6 of the 8. And they've pieced it together. They came back around and have played, you know, very respectably over, you know, the last 10 games or so.
Well, Mashpee is reeling right now. They have lost, I believe it's 7 in a row. They're sitting at 5-8 on the year. And just, I mean, they did have a very tough part of their schedule that they just ran through. Mm-hmm. But just nothing really working right now. Got shut out this week. Lost another game, 8-3. I think it was to Norwell. Just not really, they're giving away too many outs in the field. And things are just, you know, going the wrong way. Hopefully they still have enough time to turn it around. I think they're playing 20 this year. So not out of it. Just going to take a hot stretch down the, you know, as they close out. And then, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about Falmouth.
Right.
They're 13-2 right now. Had another huge, you know, 17-3 win, I think it was, against Notre Dame this week. Two stats, though, that I will throw out there because I know you love the stats.
I sure do.
Home runs on the season. Falmouth as a team has 9.
Wow. Wow.
That's nothing. Team OPS, 1.008.
Okay. So they're mashing.
The Clippers are just raking.
Yeah, all right. And how did they do against DY? Didn't they just play DY?
That got rained out. Makeup is still to be scheduled. If they win that game, they would share the ACL title 3 ways, I think, with Marshfield and DY. Everyone would be 6-2. If they lose, they end up finishing 5-3 in the league and would be the runners-up. Either way, they're already in the tournament. They're going to have a high seed in, I think they're D3. I get confused with the softball divisions. Yeah. But, you know, they are looking good. And right now they're doing it without without Maeve Cutter. She's due back next week, I believe. So, you know, once they get her back, just another huge bat in the middle of that lineup.
You know, this is kind of an off-topic point, is there's a whole lot of Maeves around this age that I've never even heard of that name before. But there, I know like 4 or 5, you know, within the high school ranks.
There are names that become popular. It's just,
yeah,
generationally.
Where did that pop up? You know, like, I don't know if that came back, or if that was like an old time, like 40s and 50s name that kind of grew back in popularity.
Well, that's funny. Like when we named our daughter Liana, it was a very original name at the time. But now there are a lot. I don't want to say a lot, but we know of like 2 or 3 other Lianas. You know,
you can thank Game of Thrones for that too, I think. The number of character names from Game of Thrones have like risen over the years.
I had no idea Liana is a...
Yeah, yes and no. So she's the mother that we recently found out, this is a big spoiler, of Jon Snow, Liana Stark, who is the sister of Ned Stark. Yes.
Okay.
Just say yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yeah.
I know there's dragons.
Right, yeah. Yeah, okay. There you go.
That's I know there's dragons and a lot of infidelity in some among siblings.
Yes.
There we go. That's what I know of Game of Thrones.
That's about, yeah, so you know nothing about Game of Thrones.
Nutshell.
Then, yeah.
Nailed it.
Boys lacrosse. Let's do that. Again, I think we're starting in Sandwich. You know, it's one of the top teams on the Cape right now, 11-4, 6-2 in the ACL, 4 games left. They play Plymouth South today. They have a game against Martha's Vineyard, which would be a nice, interesting Cape lacrosse game to close out their season. I know Mike McNeil loves playing Cape Cod lacrosse. He says that in every interview. Hey, it's Cape Cod. We love playing Cape teams. We love playing Cape Cod lacrosse.
That's
so
probably because he's going to get most of them.
Well, yeah, but I think the ACL stuff is good. Yeah, like you get the Falmouth stuff, that's good. Yeah, Nauset's been a good team typically. Not as much this year. But then you get who else do they play? They play Bourne this year, which you would think would be a more evenly matched game than it turned out to be. The Nantucket, Martha's Vineyards of the world.
Sometimes they're okay. Like Nantucket, I think, usually is okay.
Well, yeah, but I think they have one loss between both island schools right now. Like they're both red hot. Now, the what I was going to say was that, you know, as high of a record as they have, you often have to put a little asterisk on there because of who they're playing among the Cape.
Yeah, see, what really kills me is that laxpower.com is no longer.
But there is, I thought there was another lacrosse rankings website.
If there is, I did not know that. Yeah. So I'll have to search that out. Because I would like to
I thought it was like a Mass High School Hockey thing where someone else swept in the final minute.
Oh, so maybe Boston Lax has it?
Could be, yeah.
I will definitely look into that for next week to get some rankings for us. But, yeah, those island teams are, they're not bad, but they don't play at the, like Sandwich plays a legitimate schedule.
Right.
They, you know, they will pepper in some easier games. But they, for the most part, they're out there playing, you know, some high-level, you know, teams. Like, you look at Falmouth, they're going to CM today.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like they're trying to pad the win total. You know, they're trying to test themselves for the tournament.
Well, yeah, and like I said, Plymouth South's a pretty, you know, high-ranking team. I believe they got to be Division One, I would imagine. But they also play Hanover and Fia to close the season as well.
Oh, Hanover, that'll be a legit, you know.
Yeah.
And that South Shore, you know, those teams are amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think his point by saying playing Cape Cod lacrosse is not to pick up those easy W's, but it's to help grow the game locally. So that was more to save face with Mike McNeil than to correct you on anything. I just don't want that.
I don't mind if Mike's mad at me.
But yeah, again, that's a team that is just fully loaded right now, locked in, dialed in. They went out and spoiled, you know, five seniors on their senior night in Barnstable with like a solid 16-8 win. I just love those moments where you can just ruin someone's day, you know, on their home field. And just
yeah, Barnstable, I think, a little down this year.
Yeah, definitely down. It was close. It was 6-3, you know, after the first quarter, but obviously it played out as a 2-1 advantage the whole time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think, yeah, that's a team that's just looking for playoff positioning at this point. A nice high seed as they can get a couple home games, welcome those teams down to Cape Cod, and hope to don't have a letdown like they did last year. I forget what happened last year. I don't think it was a first round loss.
I think they lost in the second round because I remember
third round would have been with Falmouth.
Yeah, hoping that we were going to get a Falmouth Sandwich rematch. That
maybe they lost to Scituate. Which would that wouldn't sounds be a letdown. Right. That yeah, sounds, that's a strong team.
Yeah, and then Falmouth ended up losing to Scituate by a goal in the final. So that sounds right. Yeah, and you know, Falmouth right now kind of starting to put it together a little bit.
Okay.
Sitting at 8-6. They were 6-6 after that 5-4 loss to Marshfield, which we had said that might have been a turning point for them. And it appears to have been. They went to Fian on I think that was Wednesday, I believe, and got themselves into an early hole, got back to 5-5 by halftime, then Fian scored three goals to Falmouth none in the third. Things weren't looking very good. Clippers down 9-6 with 6 minutes to go, and they score four goals in the last six minutes. Aaron Schlesinger, freshman, with the tying and game winner with 36 seconds to
go.
Gotta
love that.
And
If he wasn't your athlete of the week, who else did better than that as a freshman move?
Yeah. And Aaron had the big game there, but also Chad Lennox, who could have also been my athlete of the week, senior in close defenseman, had 6 interceptions in that game.
Wow,
you know, they had a really big game for them. And Falmouth, you know, 8-6. Like I said, they're going to play at CM tonight, Dartmouth tomorrow morning. I get a figure they're better than Dartmouth. CM is going to be, you know, a 50-50, but they're looking at 10-6 or 9-7. And the good thing is that the lacrosse tournament is power seeded.
Right.
So 3 of those losses for Falmouth to Marshfield. You know, they lost to a very good Norwell team.
Mm-hmm.
They lost twice to Sandwich. One of those games, I think, at least was, you know, relatively close.
The first one.
Yeah. So they're not going to be the top of Division II this year, but there's every chance that when all the dust settles,
right,
they could be there at the end. You know, I like the way this team is coming together.
Well, it's coming together at the right time because after I saw them in Sandwich, they seemed to be not on the same page with one another. At least from an outsider's perspective. So.
No, I think that perspective was spot on. I think they've kind of started to figure it out. They've made some defensive changes, and I think those are real. And I think it started with that sandwich game. I believe that's when he kind of started to play a little more zone. And ever since, you know, the results have been better. They had that close game with Marshfield, and then they've got a couple of W's. Clippers are trending the right way. Over in Mashpee, they are struggling.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know because much like the baseball team, the Bourne boys lacrosse team has their backs up against the wall. They're 8-8. I have 4-3 down in the SEC. I don't think that's right. I got to go back and double check that. I want to say they're below 500 in the SEC. But anyway, they're with three games left, they have their crossover game.
They're 8-7 or 8-8, you said?
8-8.
And they have three games left?
Yeah, unless their schedule is not up to date on MIA.net.
That is a possibility.
But I know they play Mashpee and Upper Cape Tech, and as well as a crossover game. They won both those games very easily. So that should be...
They should get in.
They should get in and get to that 10 win threshold.
Yeah.
And again, they also might be a recipient of the Sullivan rule because of how many conference games they play.
I don't think against
teams
it.
That are up. They won't need it as well, but it's not bad to have that.
It is a nice thing to fall back on if you have, especially where, you know, if you get in on the Sullivan rule and you're in a power seeded tournament, you know, you may not even be at the very bottom.
Right.
You might actually have a winnable game in that first round.
Right, exactly. But again, I imagine this team is too good, although they're thin depth wise. There is a lot of good players sprinkled, you know, at the top of every position. And I would just be shocked if they, you know, were to fall to the wayside before the playoff season comes. Upper Cape Tech's already been eliminated from playoff contention. They're 5-11, 4-9 in the MAC. But Josh Winiarski did reach 200 goals. He was already the program's all-time goal scorer. So he'll graduate as that. I don't think he'll be the points leader. He doesn't have enough assists to do so. But I know Garrett Glinski had 200 points last year.
Okay.
And he graduated last year for his career. So I would have to double check to see how close he was. And he was more of like an assist man, kind of set everything up from behind the net.
Yeah.
And was had that great vision. You know, Winiarski is just a straight killer. Like, he's a shooter.
And if you
from outside too, you know, outside, inside, he's got a whole bag of tricks.
And if you want a good laugh, Wes took a couple of photos that are on his Twitter feed of him scoring. I think it was goal number 199.
199, correct. Yep.
And just as you look through that series of photos, about three shots there, keep your eyes on the defenseman who is in front of the goal.
Number 9.
In the first and second frames. I don't believe he appears in the third frame.
No, you barely point him out in the second frame. You know, he's making the business decision.
Yeah, absolutely. He saw that shot coming and said, no, that's okay. I don't want any part of this.
Well, you know, and Winiarski's a lefty, so he's kind of ripping it sidearm like that, and he's on the right side of the field. So it's coming, you know, at the hip, from the hip in the first shot, and then you see it slowly start to rise, and then when it hits the back of the net, it's eye level with where that kid would have been. So I don't blame him for wearing one.
I got a great kick out of that, and good job by you. Those are some good photos.
Yeah, that was... a very busy day for me. I had 30 minutes to be there and get my shots that I needed. And luckily, you know, those kind of came out there, despite not having his face in it. You do kind of get the nameplate in the back so you can recognize it.
It's all good.
But yeah, so that's, you know, a tough first season for Bill O'Connell, I think. You know, I think they went through a rash of injuries and maybe some disciplinary, you know, school issues that kind of left them shorthanded at different points in the season. But all in all, I think he's done a good job with the schedule that they chose to play, which was not a cupcake schedule by any means.
No.
Even in the league, you know, the Mayflower Athletic Conference is not divvied up like it is in other sports. We have a small, comprehensive, and large. It's just any of those schools that offer the lacrosse program is in there. So you get the Blue Hills, the Bristol Plymouth. Oh, Bristol Plymouth, Tri-County, and Old Colony are three. You know, very, very good teams. And then, of course, they play Bourne on a regular basis. They play Mashpee, which is a very evenly gritty game.
Those games are fun.
Which I could say the same for Bourne. They usually are gritty, you know, borderline testy.
A little rivalry there.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the same thing with the Mashpee kids, too. Yeah. I don't know why.
Cape Cod Lacrosse.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, there's a lot of familiarity. And I think – they both kind of play with a similar mentality. I think Mashpee has better athletes around, you know, just speaking of like the town.
Sure.
But they play a similar style of game, which I think is a gritty, you know, physical type of game that they're going to try to, you know, dominate you a little bit.
There you go. So girls lacrosse.
Yeah, that's it. We'll close there.
I had a historical game yesterday.
Oh.
Falmouth Academy against Falmouth High School for the first time ever. And it was a very, very entertaining game. The Clippers ended up pulling it out in the end, 12-11. Had to come from behind. Early on, I'd say that the Mariners had the best of it. They had about a 6-3 lead midway through the first half. And then Quinn O'Rourke and Lindsey Bosselman kind of started teaming together to make things happen. By halftime, it was 7-7. FA went up 11-10 with about 7.5 minutes to go. And then Falmouth was able to get goals from Sarah Krista and Lindsay Oliveira, I believe. And, you know, not girls that, you know, you hear their names a lot, but they came up big at crunch time. And then Falmouth, after taking the lead, just literally killed the last 4.5 minutes, you know, just playing keep away. Some big ground ball wins for Danny Shea and Kate Brody during those closing minutes as they were able to seal the deal. And
now, what does this say about Falmouth Academy?
I think Falmouth Academy can play with most D2 teams.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're a top-tier team anymore. And Jane Early's gone. And Jane was able to put away the ball, you know, at will for the most part. And she's still doing that in college. I believe they're still alive in the NCAA tournament at Middlebury. And she's played a huge role in that. I think FA can hang is what it says. Emily Wheeler, Ainsley Ramsey. I have another Ainsley too. We talk about names. We have an Ainsley over in Mashpee too. Ainsley Ramsey's having a really nice year there. I think that the biggest problem for the Mariners is that they just lack depth. Falmouth had a couple of kids out sick this week, so some of the regular starters did not start the game. He went with the younger kids who were at practice all week, and some of the older kids who had missed sat for 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay.
When the Falmouth had all of their players, you know, available, they were the better team, and they ended up winning in the end. But, you know, hey, FA had a chance at the end, and they put themselves in position to win.
Right.
Sarah Knowles, for the amount of, when you look at, what, they have 80 kids at that school, 100? So 50 girls, and they're able to compete just about every single year. And now competing without, you know, Jane Early, I think that's, you know, it speaks a lot to the to those kids and to that, you know, that program as a whole. So they can hang. They might win a tournament game. I don't expect that they'll go deep, but they're going to be in the tournament again. They've won, I think they're 10-5.
They're already in, right?
Yeah, they're 10-5, so 11-5, something like that.
Yeah, Sandwich right now has already punched their ticket. 11-3, unblemished record in league play. 8-0.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, they got, you know, by my count, 3 games left. But again, the MIA site, like, I'm not sure how accurate that is.
Yeah.
If that's 14, 17 games. You know, I don't know. I'm not sure. But anyway, the ones that I saw they have left on their schedule, Opponequit, Dartmouth, and ORR. Conveniently, 3 teams who were ranked above them in the Boston Herald's power rankings for lacrosse in Division II, which I find kind of laughable because they're 2-1 against those teams. In fact, they're 2-0 entering those games before the article came out.
That was the Globe's rankings?
It was the Globe's or the Herald's. I want to say it was the Herald's. I don't have any more free clicks on the Globe. So I think it's got to be the Herald.
Yeah.
But I did see an article, I think it might have been in the Globe, about Opponequit and their push for a Division II title, and they got like whooped 18-4 by Sandwich, you know, in the first meeting. And I'm like, where's the and Sandwich was on like on the bubble or like that list of teams that just like missed the honorable mention list pretty
somebody
much.
Somebody who's not doing their homework.
Yeah, and I just don't understand. Like, you know, all you gotta look is common opponents. Oh, okay, you lost, like they beat both those teams at their place. And then just recently lost to ORR, who's a legitimate team. And Opponequit's a good team. Almost lost to Bourne twice, who's 6-8. You know what I mean? Like
that was someone who either looked straight at record or went to a rankings, you know, numerical ranking site that, you know, didn't have complete data. Because anyone who pays attention, like you, would, you
know, and I'm forced to, and I get it. Like, you know, I don't know anything about the teams above them in the greater Boston area, you know, like, but I don't know. Like,
that's what I love about...
I'm also not in charge of doing top 20 statewide rankings.
And that's why I love the Globe's hockey rankings, because you and I actually have some say in that, because our good friend Jake Levin, you know, is the one who puts that together, and he will actually ask for our input on how those teams actually are. And, you know, hey, what do you know about these guys? And, you know, some of the writers out there break a sweat, others not so much.
Yeah, I think... you know, this is an unwarranted shot or anything, but I had the similar thing during the hockey season with the Upper Cape boys lacrosse team as they started off on whatever their stretch was to open the season.
Yeah.
But they're like, are these guys for real in D3?
Yeah.
They have great top line.
Yeah. You
know, they have a good goalie. You know, but they got some things they got to work out there too. And they're playing, you know, some of the trolls of the Mayflower Athletic Conference.
There you go.
So I think that, you know, you got to look past the record and the final scores, because, you know, I think actually if you do look at the scores of the games, then you got to be like,
who are they playing?
Okay, what's going on here? Exactly. This is like a 12-0 game.
This is ice hockey. You're not supposed to score 12 goals. It's supposed to be 3-1.
Red flag should be raised for you there. But, you know, Sandwich, they beat Barnstable this week as well. You know, after bouncing back against that loss to Old Rochester, which snapped a 7-game win streak for them, I think it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, they get right back on the horse, you know, and that Barnstable team isn't very good. They had an 11-1 lead at halftime that turned into, I think it was 16-3 or something like that.
That sounds about right.
But again, much like the boys team, it's coming from all over the place. You know, they had eight different goal scorers in that game. So, you know, it's... You know, Sam Gerasi, Ingrid Kanas, Tatum La Rochelle, they're getting their multiple goals. But then it's Macy White, Morgan Ramsey, Caroline Barrett, I'm going to be playing Claire Moniz, all kind of Hanlon O'Neill, who all kind of come in and then they kind of finish off the job. You know what I mean?
And that's how you have, you know, that's how you end up getting a player who scores your big goal in the postseason, because they've done it during the regular season.
Right.
And that's why you pile up the wins, because it's not just one or two kids. It's, you know, a bevy, and that's what you need. I mean, if you're going to have a successful season, it can't just be one person. I don't think I've ever seen a team that won a championship because they had one good player.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think basketball, generally speaking, is the one sport that you can really say that one player can have that big impact on. But even then, scoring's got to come from other places.
Yeah. Maybe at the lower levels, but the higher divisions especially, you need to have a team.
Yeah.
And I think Sandwich has a team. I think that, you know, if they get a good draw, I think they're going to make a nice run.
Yeah, and they should. You know, like I said, 11-3 right now. So, you know, if they were to win two of their last three, you know, by my count of what they have left on the schedule here, which seems very doable, you're looking at a 13-4 record. I mean, you can't really ask for much more than
that. No, it's a pretty good year.
Yeah. I think that wraps up things for me. You got anything else you want to add? You want to air any grievances? We've got 7.5 minutes.
I was going to say, is it Festivus time already?
Yeah, well, you know, it's every day is Festivus if you make it that day.
That is true. That
depends on... Depends on how angry you are.
No. I mean, I've just been loving watching my favorite thing, the Stanley Cup playoffs every night, and the next week's going to stink.
Okay, so you asked me a question about the NBA. I have a question for you about the NHL.
Okay. I think I know where this is going.
Everybody, it's a consensus, and I think I've fallen into this trope as well, the NHL has the best playoff system.
Yeah, no.
Well, throw out what... recently changed with the interdivisional.
They have the most competitive playoff.
Right. Which makes it the most interesting, right?
Yes, in absolutely. Theory.
So that's kind of where I was going with that. But not so much the interdivisional first round games. Yeah. Is it, though? That's my question. Because all the best teams, like the Bruins had the least path of resistance, right? Or the path of least resistance.
They had the easy, after the first round, they definitely had the easiest run.
Would you rather have it like the NBA, where all the crappy teams get discarded early and you get your best matchups in the conference finals and then hopefully in the finals as well? Or in the NHL, where teams like Calgary, Toronto, Tampa Bay, you know, a lot of these good teams get ousted in the first round, and then you have the Carolina Hurricanes in the Eastern Conference Finals.
I think the reason I like the NHL better is because, let's say you're a fan of the Orlando Magic. Did you ever really think that your team had a chance?
This year.
I mean, they were the 8 seed, right?
No, yeah.
But you never really believed that they were going to, in a series, that they were going to knock off the number 1 seed. They weren't going to beat Milwaukee. But
it was Detroit, I think.
I thought it was Orlando.
That's why I was confused.
Okay, my bad.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, whoever what I'm saying is the lowest seed in the NBA, you never ever expect there to be an upset. And at least in hockey, because, you know, and maybe it's just the way the game is played, and it's such a physical game, and there's a goaltender, and that is always the great equalizer, is having a goaltender. But I think it gives fan bases, you know, reason to get excited, because there's, even though, you know, Carolina gets swept by the Bruins,
they didn't even show up.
And they really were, bad. They played really one good period out of the 12, the first period in game 3. But even though they, you know, laid such an egg in the conference finals, they gave their fans so much to get excited about in the first 2 rounds. I mean, they knock off, you know, the Stanley Cup champions. I think it gives many more...
From a singular fan base, but how about objectively speaking?
I think it
gives... Do you want to see these Cinderella teams run out of gas in the finals or the Eastern Conference finals?
I like seeing Cinderella teams, you know.
Yeah, but then you know that it's just a 4-game sweep, and then what's the product that you're putting out?
Well, not
there?
If the Cinderella keeps it going. They did run out of gas.
That doesn't always happen.
But, you know, on the other side, you have a really good matchup between, you know, a quasi Cinderella and St. Louis, you know, considering where they came from midway through the season, and, you know, a really good San Jose team who you could argue shouldn't even be there. You know, they got lucky in the first round against Vegas with that penalty.
In the second round too, but yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I love the competitiveness. I love not knowing what team is going to come out of there. And it's more fun. And
to me, I want the best teams to be playing the best teams.
Sure.
So, like, in this situation, it looks like it's going to be Golden State and Milwaukee. Or even Toronto. I think those teams are pretty evenly matched. So any form of Golden State versus the Eastern Conference champion, I think will be an interesting test. Because now I'm seeing the MVP against the reigning champions. And if Milwaukee ends up coming out and pulling it out, then how great of a story is that? You knocked off the reigning defending champion.
All right, but let me ask you this. Would you have gotten excited about a Toronto versus Houston final? That would have been pretty good, right?
Yeah, it would be good.
That's basically what you would get if it's San Jose and Boston.
Yeah, but the Eastern Conference final was whack.
Yes, this year, but, you know, that happens every now and then.
Well, that's what I mean. My question is, like, do you prefer the upsets early and getting a lame, you know, result in an easier path,
or
do you want to slowly build up to the best competition?
I think you would. Well, the best way to do that is to go back to 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, with these weird, you know, interdivisional first rounds.
Well, they are 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, right? I mean,
no, it was
that 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7. You get the two wild card teams against the two division winners.
Well, you have two in the East. It was 2 versus 3, 1 versus wild card.
Which was the bottom seed.
Yes, but it's 2 versus 3 in the division. If you had gone 1 through 8, the Bruins are the 2. And they would have played the 7, which should have been, I think, the Islanders. But because, you know, the way they do it, they end up playing Toronto, who should have been the 3 overall, and they played them in the first round.
Yeah, but you still have to win your division. That's like, it's the same thing in the NBA, where if you win your division, you're guaranteed a home.
Yes, you are. But if you finish second, the worst you could be is the 3 seed. You know, if the Celtics had the second best record, they would have been the 3 in their division. They would have been the 3 seed, correct?
I don't know. I'm sorry. We gotta cut this short here. We're gonna be running up on time.
All right, we'll revisit this at a later time. But I like it the way it is.
Okay. I should have known that I was not gonna get a succinct response from you. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back next week talking playoffs, more playoffs, hopefully.
High school.